Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
I am unashamed. What about you?
Well, this is the last podcast of the year.
Is it?
It is. The last one that'll air this year. Which is, so I guess this is one of those reflective, you should look back on the, what was the highlight of 2021? Because it's, for us, this will be it. Merry Christmas, by the way, to all the listeners out there.
I'm reaching the age in my life where my reflection only goes back to the morning hunt. Put me on the spot here.
Anytime I go past 12 hours with Jay, some reflections, I'm not going to get too far.
It's kind of like what this morning, you know, we've been in the split, and we haven't supposedly been anywhere near this little lake that we hunted this morning in 17 days.
Yep.
Well, they know supposedly about it. We have not been around that.
Well, there were some rumors that someone maybe disturbed the ducks in the scouting and all that. So, but I did an interrogation. Phil said, hey, it wasn't me. So
when your diapers were just in, there was yellow in your diapers, you was about that age. I was chasing ducks, so I'm way ahead of you there, the hoss. Okay.
And Jace, my question to you is, what were you eating to put yellow in the diapers? That sounds like a bad diet.
Probably whatever I could find.
He was a young boy, and I was at the peak of the duck killing at that point.
So this is
Jace was having a steady diet of corn and mustard, I guess.
Did you scare him? You didn't scare him, did you? I said,
well,
no.
We all thought that the ducks were going to be there. It was our best hole in the first split. We showed up today,
yeah.
But it was kind of like a ghost town.
Oh, boy.
So then Jay, he's the one that brought up.
So then the blame game starts.
Well, he brought up the accusation.
Oh,
he
yeah.
said, well, the only thing I can think of is feeling them, been up here scouting and run them off.
Boy, it's pretty bad, Dad. You're at the age now where they'll just, you get thrown under the bus.
They're just young.
Well, the argument ensued. And so then everybody was talking about we were in the wrong spot. We need more decoys. And people kind of started arguing but chuckling along the way. And then
it was more in jest is what
you're saying. To get back to my reflective moment, we actually said, you know, we used to be worried about how many decoys we got, how much brush is on the blind. But now we're mainly looking at topics of having wheelchair access to the blinds. Today we discovered that because it was slippery, there was no chance of rain, and it started raining. And the boards were slippery because it's real muddy.
Yep.
So we're like, we need
rain mixed with a little sleet.
Yeah, no, it was cold this morning.
We need AstroTurf on the floor.
Yep.
So you don't fall.
Mom has that all outside her house now.
And so I said, hey, well, while you're at it, go ahead and put oxygen tanks in every blind. So that was...
Oh, boy. So basically, we're turning the duck blinds into a geriatric center is what we're talking about.
So the people in the blind, my point is, me included.
Which I'm not against that because I'm not getting any younger myself.
You know, I'm the young buck of this outfit. Phil kept calling me and Jay young bucks. But we're, you know, I can't remember a whole lot. This year was a blur.
Yeah.
So,
I would say if I were speaking for you, since you can't remember, the correct answer is probably finding out you were going to be a grandfather.
That was a highlight.
Yeah. Since Missy will probably be listening to this, we better highlight that.
That was
when young bucks are called young bucks, you don't think of it in terms of them being grandfathers.
That's right.
And my point exactly.
And Dad, you this year, so when Jason and Missy and then Phyllis, their oldest son is having a child. So all of your children except for Jeppico will be grandfathers.
Yep.
You know, into next year. So that's pretty amazing.
This one came along and what He was marked at an early age, but he didn't realize it. But Cy pulled up on the bank of Red River, and I was out in the middle of the river baiting a trout line. He said, "Hey," he said, "Miss Kate's having that baby." I said, "What do you want me to do about it? I can't help her out. That's between her and the doctor or whatever." And he said, "Well, what do you want to name him? She wants to know what you want to name him." I said, "Name him after you." Name to this day is Jason Silas Robertson. That's how he got the name.
I just realized you were talking about me.
That's how Jace got here.
That's pretty bad when it was 2 minutes into that conversation. But
knowing what you know now, when he said, "Miss Kay's having that baby," that's when you said, if you'd have known what you know now, you said, "Whatever you do, don't screw this up." Life-changing occurrence.
Old Si told him to name him after you. And Si, speaking of him, I said, "Name him after you, you know, Jason Silas."
Well, so,
and he hollered, "Yay."
I'll give you a reflection.
Well, the irony is that Jay's named his oldest son Reed Silas, so the legacy continues on.
I'll show you another thing.
Silas lives on.
Of age. This is the first year that I remember. I've gone through the whole year. And to my knowledge, I don't believe Si and I have had one argument.
Really?
No. All of a sudden, he's...
Is it because he lacks the oxygen now to really just to get into the full banter?
That crossed my mind.
Both of them are beginning to mellow.
But I thought, you know how Si, he gets in a habit of hearing the argument, then he picks a side. But he usually always picks Phil's side. But this year I've noticed I must be at the right age now. He's joining my team.
Oh, so he'll side with you now sometime.
Yeah, he likes to kind of gang
up. Because for years
on,
it was always, he was going to be on the other side.
He actually
what
sat
Jace
beside
is trying
me
to
today.
Say is, deep within the bowels of his mind, he's trying to say that, "I think I'm mellowing," and so is Si. They begin to mellow.
I think that's it. You just get tired of fighting, I guess. Or you start arguing, it's just in jest.
I thought it was fun.
Mm-hmm. So our next podcast will drop in 2022, which will be January 7th. This one is before Christmas. I did want to mention, Dad, that we have the in my formerly nicotine-stained hands, this is the... copy. It's not the official copy. They call it advanced reader of your new book, Uncancelled.
Hey,
which is exciting. You can go to talkshoplive.com to get to sign up to get a pre-copy that's going to be signed. So be sure and check that out. That'll be coming out in February, which is going to be exciting. Then Mom and Lisa have a new book coming out next year too. So we got a lot of good stuff happening into 2022.
All right, you got any wild predictions of next year?
Man, 2022 predictions. It's an election cycle, so that'll be interesting.
Who's running?
Well, all the House of Representatives and half the Senate, so there'll be a lot of political talk. I guess these days it's political talk year-round. I mean, even in off-year elections. So that'll be next year. It could be interesting. A lot of people are predicting a red wave, they're calling it. They think the Republicans are going to make a charge, so we'll see how that fans itself out. I think inflation will probably keep going. It hadn't been too good. If you haven't noticed, it's everything's a little bit higher these days.
Well, maybe we ought to just keep sharing Jesus. And
I'm that's where I am. Yeah. I'm just preaching the gospel, the good news of Jesus, and the political part of it. I'm sorry. I don't think it's
that has
political
been,
fix.
We that has to, been the purpose of Unashamed.
We went to
one.
A Christmas, in quotation, service yesterday. It was just awesome. So I'm like, and the singing, they sang Christmas songs, you know, but Jesus themed.
Yeah.
But the sermon, you know, we read in Luke 2, I mean, talking about Jesus becoming a baby. I mean, here's God in flesh. God is with us. But then it was just a 30-minute sermon on the grace of God. Mm. I mean, wow. That John 1, Jesus came full of grace and truth.
Yep.
Is awesome. I was moved and I was inspired. I thought, this is what I'm going to do next year.
That's right.
Right here, buddy.
And it really is. I mean, you know, it's with this time of year, you think about the birth of Christ, which you should, and billions of people are celebrating it around the world, which is exciting to me.
And which is pretty enlightening in that
there's all this confusion about Jesus, his death, burial, and resurrection, and going back to be seated at the right hand of God to mediate for us, sin problem solved, grave problem solved. It's amazing that worldwide there's some kind of celebration by most countries of Jesus becoming flesh.
That's right.
Any way you want to slice it.
That's exactly right. Anywhere you go.
Anywhere you go.
You know what's weird, though, is people only take, you have pictures of Jesus when he's a baby. Just think about it, mangers. And,
yep.
Then you have him as a 30-year-old man.
Yep.
Nothing in between.
That's right.
Nothing. What happened?
Here's what happened. It was I believe, a purposeful void. In other words, for some reason, God didn't want us to know, because we only get one little small reference when he was 12 years old.
That's right.
When he's in the temple.
Yep.
And that's it.
So, I guess nobody wants to be the first guy to say, you know what? I'm going to try when he was 15.
Here's very little written about the boy, Jesus.
Well, think about from Jason's right, from 12 to 30. You know, you think about your own lives, us sitting here at this table, especially you, Dad. A lot changed from 12 to 30.
That's correct.
but Jesus was just, I guess, working for his family.
Well, you have the one scene where he was hanging out at the temple. Because you wonder how he wasn't like he was from a place.
And that was unbeknowing to his parents.
That were educating. You know, it wasn't like we think here you go to school or whatever. But it was a place where most of the people around there were uneducated.
Right.
And it was just hard to learn and make a way for
when there was no aristocracy about him, because his family were in the carpentry business. I mean, they built things. That's what they did. That's what his earthly father did. So there was nothing special, you're right, as about in terms of his upbringing, or, you know, it wasn't like he was royalty. Or,
but think about a 12-year-old when asked the question, what are you doing? We've been looking for you.
Well, they were hot. I mean, which I would be too.
It's slight chewing out, and his answer was, I have to be about my father's business.
Yeah.
Well, you can imagine a 12-year-old kid saying that. You're like, I mean, his father's business was the salvation of the world.
Right.
That was his business. You like, and he knew that at 12.
Right.
But think about a 12-year-old with.
Well, he was leading the Bible study.
Yeah.
But I think it makes
and everybody,
people,
all the old hands were sitting there thinking, how in the world did this kid learn about all these texts?
Well, again, and in this culture.
Because they didn't realize he wrote them.
In this culture, you didn't earn the right to do what he was doing officially until you were 30 years old.
That's correct.
I mean, you couldn't even be a rabbi to this.
That's my point.
So
that's why he was underestimated, though.
Yeah.
Because all the teachers of the law and the Pharisees, they'd have all these trap questions. I mean, how many times have we read a paragraph through Matthew?
Oh, yeah.
And they're like trying to set a basis for a trap. I mean, these were highly educated. This is what they do every day. You know, I went to the seminary for 2 years. You listen to these guys just drone on for hours, and then all the classmates argued amongst themselves about what he just got through saying.
Yeah.
And if it got loud enough, then he joined the argument, and that's kind of how you learn. It was just intellect on some kind of enhancement drug. I mean, remember?
Yeah.
I mean, it was just one argument after another. So they thought it'd be easy with Jesus because he's from the wrong part of town. What are you, a carpenter's son? What do you know? So I'm sure that's why they were always shocked when he gave them an answer that they just thought,
plus,
where does he? There's actually a verse somewhere that says, where does this man get these things?
That's right. Let's take a break. So one of the things I think that's consistent with duck season is you have to figure out your sleep patterns to get the right amount of sleep, right? Because you got to start going to bed early if you're going to be up morning. But making that transition, of course, you guys are making it back because you have a couple of weeks off. So that
if you get up at 3:45 every morning, at some point you'll start going to bed earlier.
It's just by nature, right? Because you got to have one of the things you want to enjoy with your sleep is a comfortable bed and comfortable sheets. And one of our sponsors, Bowl and Branch, makes, in my opinion, the best sheets out there. They're really, really good. So this, there was a husband and wife team that founded this company. and have really done a good job in growing it. Everything is toxin free, fair trade certified, great product. We want you to check it out. Best deals of the year going right now from through 12/23 with the promo code Robertson when you go to bollandbranch.com. That's B-O-L-L and branch.com. Use the promo code Robertson. Exclusions may apply. Check these guys out. But, Jace, one of the things that's interesting, I just thought about it, is one of the reasons why you never hear anything about his youth is that all the people that wrote down the accounts that we get, and again, it was done by the Holy Spirit, but they didn't all meet him until he was 30 years old.
They
didn't know who he was. And that tells me that Jesus must not have talked a lot about his upbringing, or we would have, you know, when he used illustrations, he never said, you know, like we do it all the time.
Yeah.
When I was 10 years old, I did this, or that time I did that. But his stuff was all just right in the current, you know, what was going on. So that is kind of interesting. I never really thought about that. And I kind of wish.
He was zoned in at an early age.
He was. I kind of wish there was more, because I think one of the things that The Chosen, we talk about this a lot with The Chosen, has done that I love is provide more windows into the humanity of Jesus. Mm-hmm. I think it's the one thing a lot of followers today miss, because they're so zeroed in on him as Lord and King, which is great. I agree with that too. But he did come here. He was a man.
John said the most about him. John 1, verse 14, you mentioned. Then you have 1 John 4.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have 2 John. And I looked up while I go at 3 John in case I'd missed it. But it's John, 1 John 4, and then 2 John.
Yep.
He mentions it. And man, you talk about... He said, you get somebody that doesn't believe Jesus is God in flesh, get him out of that. Get away from him.
Well, certainly in John's lifetime, since he lived longer than all the apostles, he definitely dealt with people that were really into denying Jesus ever was a man.
That's it.
And so he had to deal with it more severely. But, you know, the Hebrew writer in Hebrews 1 and 2 does a pretty good job, too, of establishing that Jesus is one of us. Yeah. You know, that was, but you're right. You don't get that much.
Which of the angels did you ever say, you know, that, you know, he was called the Son of God? None.
Right. That's exactly right. No, that's true. But, you know, when you look at it, so I think that really goes in. I love what you said, though, Jace. The message is really about grace. And I mean, that's what you have to, you know, you have to keep coming back to what he did, why he did it. But celebrating his birth, I think, is.
Yeah. One of the things they did in a sermon yesterday, Tom Lowe, you've heard him before.
Yeah.
Tom. I never had noticed that almost every book in the New Testament in the salutation starts with grace.
Yep.
And then when you go to the end, it finishes with grace.
Correct. Yep.
And he went through most of them, seemed like off the top of his head. But it's something you kind of take it for granted. You don't really think about that, you know, God, he is full of grace and mercy.
Oh.
And he talked about it being a compounding grace. And his illustration was doing the opposite, how the baggage from your sin weighs you down. And even in under the old law, you know, that John 1 that we talked about, 14, you know, Moses gave the law. But they went through all these rituals because of their sins, but it didn't forgive their sins. It just carried them over to the next year. Yeah. And through that, you create the guilt and the baggage of your sins. He made an illustration. He was like, just imagine if your sins, you had to pack them up in suitcases like you were going on a trip. You know, at some point, you've got tens of suitcases, if not hundreds, that you're trying to haul around. And
there's a verse in somewhere in Isaiah, Jason, that says they dragged their sin behind them as in carts.
Yeah, I think he made mention of that.
Yeah.
And so, but that was his illustration to show that, but have you ever thought about God's compounding grace? You know, we think about the compounding problems,
right.
But he's like, What about God's compounding grace? It's just, you're not gonna out-sin his grace. And then he had that illustration, that point where all the verses in every book starts and ends with the grace of God. Yep. Even the last verse in the Bible, Revelation 22, says the grace of God, may God's grace be on God's people. So it was really encouraging.
The whole group of individuals who live during that time frame, a long time, by the way, 1,500 years, before this faith came, we were held prisoners by the law, locked up until faith and the grace of God be revealed. So the law was put in charge to lead us to Christ that we might be justified by faith. Now the faith has come. We're no longer under the supervision of the law. And I'm saying, yay to that. You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying.
Whew.
That's exactly right. Well, and you know, the to me, the significance of John 1 and 1 John 1 is that John does such a good job of tying in the coming of Christ to the earth as a human being, but also back to Genesis 1 as God, because you can see there that he goes back and forth the idea that he's both.
Yeah.
Because, again, if you don't understand that, and a lot of people are confused by it in the religious world. They're confused. They're like, well, is he God or is he man? The answer is yes. And to me, it's so obvious, because when he talks about himself, he talks about the Son of Man, but he talks about the Son of God. It's very evident that he has no problem in both worlds.
Yeah, when you're called that instead of he, you know, John said, that which was from the beginning, which we've heard, which we've seen with our eyes, which we've looked at, and our hands have touched. He's outlining every physical thing that you could do. He said, we've watched him, and he didn't even know exactly what to call him. That.
Right.
He's calling him a that. Because he's saying, look, he's way...
No one like him.
No.
So, Jace, that was Isaiah 5:18. Woe to those who draw sin along with cords of deceit and wickedness as with cart ropes. That idea of compounding sin, just to tie it off that thought that we talked about.
Well, I like that Romans 9:5. I've read this before. But it says, theirs are the patriarchs, and from them is traced the human ancestry of Christ, who is God forever all praised.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think about how Matthew and Luke are set up, they start off with the genealogy, his human history going back in his seed line.
Right.
But you also, I mean, Paul just made reference in Romans 9. Here's a being that you can trace his human ancestry. And he is God over all. I mean, just that sentence itself is hard for us to get our...
And it also makes it unique to any of the world's religions that have ever been.
That's correct.
No other world religion is anywhere near this, the concept and the thought process. You know,
they usually start with some guy sitting under a tree and...
Right.
Well,
it's a prophet or someone that has a prophecy that comes from some other place, or the idea of just kind of melding into everything. It's a mysterious, mystical, which people are really drawn to that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which I get it. I mean, we talk a lot about creation and we talk about God in infinite space or without space. But at the same time, that's what makes it different, is that he's right here with us. Like the idea of living day by day and having a relationship with God, where so many people, they don't know that. They have no idea. Yeah.
But it makes people feel uncomfortable, because you don't, like if you say, well, Jesus, you know, he went through puberty, you know.
Right.
But people don't, that makes them uncomfortable.
That's right.
There's like, well, but he was the Son of God. Yeah, he was the Son of God and he was a human.
Yeah.
When males get 13 or 14 or 12, 13, they go through puberty.
Yep.
Like, we don't want to talk about that.
You know? That voice starts cracking. It's coming. You know, but Hebrews 2:14-18, he was made like his brothers in every way. So there wasn't anything lacking other than the only thing different is he never sinned. I mean, that's the only
thing. I just think there's a common thread in religious people that we try to figure everything out.
Yeah.
And if it's almost like that's their Christian lifestyle, is to try to get it all right where it all makes sense in your mind. But you're never going to grasp a being that is God and man 100%.
That's right. And because you can't see it from his perspective as the divine, so it's very hard on your human side to understand.
I mean, it's just like his grace. You're never going to truly grasp that. And even, you know, the part that we're fixed to be talking about the next couple sessions about Judas, you know, why is he washing the feet of this fellow that's fixed to betray him? Why is he in the inner circle?
Yeah, why does he call him friend, you know, at the moment of his betrayal?
And look,
which I thought was devastating. You know,
the theories on why this happened are long. I mean, in the religious world, I mean, from everything imaginable. Yeah. I mean, this was actually, he had to have him for God's plan, or, you know, Satan indwelled him. Or it was just about the money. I mean, it's just about the money. But, I mean, to me, are we going to get into that?
Yeah, let's take a break first. So, Dad, in your new book, Uncanceled, you talk quite a bit about standing up for what you believe in, especially in a culture that doesn't always want to listen to what you have to say, but you still have truth. And that's part of what the Unashamed podcast has always been about. One of our sponsors is a company called Patriot Mobile, and they really stand up for what they believe in as well. They've been defending liberty and religious freedom since 2012. They're the only Christian conservative wireless provider. If that matters to you, you want to connect with these guys. They fit any budget. They have a 100% U.S.-based customer support team that provides excellent customer support. They share your values. They fight for religious freedom, sanctity of life. They also are great for veterans and first responders. So you want to check these guys out. Go to patriotmobile.com/Phil, or you can call them at 972-PATRIOT. You get free activation with the offer code PHIL. It's always special discounts for veterans and first responders. So check them out, patriotmobile.com/Phil, or call them at 972-PATRIOT.
What I think it is, based on everything I read, it's no different than the garden. I really believe that Judas didn't think God's plan was as good as his.
Yeah.
I mean, and it goes back to the same thing in the garden. I mean, whether it was that he was trying to just kind of prompt this thing into, because the disciples all struggled with this from a spiritual perspective. Mm-hmm. It was all about this physical kingdom. We're going to take over. We're going to be in control. Because one of the theories is that, you know, Judas was just doing this to force Jesus to whoop the Roman Empire. Yeah, I'll hand him over, but he's already said he's going to be king. But I think there's some of that in there, that the fact that you would betray the Son of God / Son of Man, you got to think pretty highly of yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, you have no fear of the consequences of that. So that's why I said I think it just goes back to same thing in the garden. He just didn't trust God.
Right.
He wasn't listening.
And the fact that Matthew drops this in 26:14 and through 16, right after Judas had an issue, remember, with the woman, with Mary, having this, you know, in his mind, an extravagant, you know, wasting all this money by pouring this. So obviously he wasn't happy with the way things were going.
No, and he didn't like that plan.
No.
I mean, when Jesus took up for her and was like, she's done a great thing, and wherever the gospel is preached, this will be shared as well. But he didn't like that.
Mm.
That's what I mean. He didn't like God's plan.
That's right.
No,
he didn't.
He ended up pretty frustrated when he just slung the 30 pieces of silver.
Well, it wasn't frustrated. It actually said he repented. He was remorseful.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
And so a lot of people think, well, he repented. But he, you know, that's why I always come up with that analogy when people, you know, have suicidal thoughts or respond that. You know, it's coming from a place where you realize that you can't do it on your own, and you're weak and you're flawed and you're hopeless, or you're. And there's a lot of truth in that, because you see him, he repents, but instead of realizing God's grace to that extent.
Once again, he goes with his own plan.
He went, I'm hopeless again. Yep. And even I myself, I'm not gonna try to figure that out or figure out how God worked that out, because I'm trusting God's plan here. That's what happened. I read, because people have said, well, what happened to Judas? I'm like, well, nothing good based on what I've read. Yeah. And they're like, well, do you think, you know, that God's grace, because they bring up that fact that later on we're going to see that he was buried in the potter's field, which was a place only the potter went. And so it was reserved for foreigners, which is a little ironic, because here's what you got. Gentiles and people that are not from there, and he's buried there on the day Jesus dies. I mean,
right.
It's just,
when the field,
it does seem like there's some reason.
But what makes it even more, the field was bought with the 30 pieces of silver. We know that from,
yeah, because they quote this passage from Jeremiah or Zechariah, which was a fulfillment of,
yeah, it was all predicted.
I think it was Zechariah 11. You can look at it, talking about the 30 pieces of silver. But, I mean, it does seem ironic that, because God's grace can reach everyone. So there seems to be something there that produces some hope, because we know how many illustrations in here about God as the potter and, oh, yeah, we're the clay. And
But much has been made from this. Josh may remember, there was some movie I saw where there were like 30 demons and they all carried one of the coins.
Oh, yeah.
With them. What was that?
Wow, Hollywood got a hold to this, and then we'll run with it.
And so then you had these, like, they were these fallen demons, and they were having to fight it out with somebody. I don't remember what the movie was. But it was intriguing. It was based on this idea about the 30 pieces of silver.
Because a lot of people say, well, if Judas hadn't have betrayed him, well, this is how he died, which saved the world. It's like, yeah. But, I mean, my point about God's grace is, because everyone right after this, everyone fell away. I mean, Jesus predicted it in 26 and 31. He told them, this very night, you will all fall away on account of me.
Yeah.
Now, the rest of them responded very well after they fell away. But Judas, in my opinion,
we know what got me, Jace, was that, Because I kind of compare it to, you know, because Peter's predicted denial, which, let's face it, it's a betrayal as well. I mean, it's maybe lesser than what Judas did, but it's still, I mean, you know, it was bad. He denied him three times, and he told him he would. But the difference in Judas and Peter was that Peter waited 3 days.
Yeah.
And didn't do anything. If Judas had just waited 3 days and then saw a resurrected Christ, his whole future may have been changed. I mean, because he felt bad. He repented.
Well, some of the disciples finally,
he just didn't trust.
They were running from, you know, the tomb. They found, they went into the tomb. Finally, the other disciple, John and Peter, who had reached the tomb first, also went inside. He saw and believed. They still did not understand from Scripture that Jesus had to rise from the dead.
Right.
All the way to in there and looked and said, good night. He said he was going to die in 3 days, be raised from the dead. They all were thinking, he just did that.
That's right.
But I think it's a pattern. When you don't trust God's plan, which you didn't, and for a moment, the other disciples didn't either, well, then you have a choice to embrace God's grace. And that is, That was God's idea, not ours. You think about it. I mean, even in the garden, he laid out the plan. Well, it didn't go as planned. So how'd they respond? They lied. They blamed. I mean, the same kind of scenario. I mean, but as you read, I mean, you don't take that lightly. Every book starts off with God's grace and ends with God's grace. It's there. There's always a way out. He's provided in the plan a way to rescue you when you don't trust the plan.
Yeah.
Yep.
So for you to not trust the plan, you have to compound that by saying, not only am I not going to trust the plan, I'm not going to seek your grace.
Right.
As awesome as it is.
If you don't trust the plan, that means you don't trust the man.
That's really what it's saying.
It is. Yeah. Let's take another break. Hey guys, we like to try to keep you aware of some of the things that we're doing outside of Unashamed. And one of those is we mentioned Phil is going to Substack, which is kind of humorous to me because Substack was started by some writers from the New York Times that got tired of having their stuff censored. And then a lot of other people, conservatives, liberals, it doesn't matter. People that don't want to be canceled are going to Substack. So we want to encourage you guys to check that out at philrobertson.substack.com. If you subscribe, you're going to get notified about things that are on Substack. One of those is the first chapter of Uncancel, which is there right now. If you want to check that out, there may be future ones on there. So check that out, philrobertson.substack.com. Also, wanted to tell you about Talk Shop Live, which we've been talking about. It's the only place where you can get your daily fill to start this new year, which is a 100-day devotional by Dad. So the publisher added some more copies. They sold all the other ones out. They have some more. You can go get them there. You can also have some signed copies available. The link's going to be in the podcast show notes. So check that out, Talk Shop Live and Substack. No, but I do think this has great application to people today. Because many times you look at and you know you're doing something, you're living a certain way, you know that's not God's will for your life. Whether you read it in the scripture, you hear us talking about it, someone you know and trust. And
you,
so
you have that pesky, you got the pesky conscience.
That's right.
That keeps pestering you. And
that's
you,
right.
You're wondering why.
And you know something, Dad, when Judas goes back, and he tries to undo what he did. Mm-hmm. He's like, here, take the money back. We don't need to do this. Because he realizes once he sees him captured over in 27. And he said, I've betrayed innocent blood. And they said, what's this to us? That's your responsibility.
Yeah.
So that shows you right there that evil collaborators never have a joint conscience. They could have all said, you know what? You're right.
That's why everyone's conscience can get them to get on another path.
That's exactly right.
He has it open for
but
you.
But don't trust.
Get on another
don't
path.
Don't trust evil collaborators because all they're going to do is throw you under the bus.
And don't quit. It.
Then don't quit.
Don't quit.
Wait 3 days. Something great may happen. You know? I mean, that's what my point always is. There may be a resurrection moment coming 3 days if you just stick with what God's plan is for your life instead of just saying, no, I want to do what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
We do a lot of marriage stuff and, you know, a couple will be having a lot of problems, and I get it. You know, marriage is hard, and maybe somebody's been unfaithful. And they're just like, well, I think God wants me to be happy. And so I just think the best thing is for us to split up. And I always tell us, if you just would not go there and give God a chance, because I promise you it could be really great if you both trusted in the plan. But it's really hard because people want to follow their own path. And when they do, it usually winds up disastrous.
Yeah. And I just think it's just a natural, it's a natural progression that just kind of goes down into a black hole. I mean, even when we're teenagers, you just tend to want to run with the crowd and do the things they're doing and not consider God's path for your life.
Right.
And in marriage, it's the same way. Once you make up your mind that, you know, you put your mate you enter the transfer portal, as they say. I mean, once you're in there, it's impossible to get them out. Because then all of a sudden they start losing weight, working out, because you're back out on the market. And it's just you're no longer considering that oath you made in the beginning because the excitement is too great.
That's funny you said that because Larry the Cable Guy, he tweeted a couple of days ago. He said, well, got bad news. My wife's entered the transfer portal. And he was just joking. But, I mean, it was like I hadn't thought about it.
I was thinking of that now because it's like ruining college football.
No, that and paying them is ruining it. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Now it's like, because you could just go somewhere else and immediately play. So forget rivalry. None of that matters.
Yeah, forget your school. Forget all the, you know, rah-rahs. Now it's money,
who's got the biggest paycheck, and let's just go play for them. I mean, you know, one of our guys just went to Alabama, which, you know, it was like the from a fan's perspective, you're like, I can't believe he did it. But it's just now, it's just the way of the game. It's, you know, they're ruining college football.
Yeah, it is. But, I mean, people just, it's like once you don't, you lose hope. You just think how dangerous that is. And when you read these verses, you're like, well, how do you lose hope when God's grace is the beginning and end of all things?
Right.
It's always there. Well, there's always a path out of this provided right. by God's grace. That's what he did. You know, a verse he read yesterday was Titus 3:5. God saved us not because of righteous things we had done, but because of his mercy.
Yep.
I mean, it's just a simple statement. But that causes you, what? Because then he goes on to say you were saved through the washing of rebirth and renewal by the Holy Spirit. Well, yeah, you had a choice in there,
right?
In that process, but you also kept your chin up and said, you know what? God's got a way out. As bleak as this seems, that's why when you go back and read the Old Testament, some of the stories, all of a sudden, because it seems almost impossible that Abraham would sacrifice his son.
Right.
But he was trusting God's plan at a way higher level than we normally do.
Yeah.
He was like, well, he must can raise the dead. That would have been the last thing I'd have thought. I'd have thought, well, I don't know about this.
and you know Isaac and Sarah were thinking, I don't know
well,
about
Isaac's
this.
Looking around. Well, the wife, she's gone. You would think Sarah would be going down to some kind of police force or something, saying, my husband's gone crazy. He's fixed a kill.
But Jason, that's why Abraham is the father of our faith. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And not
that's
you or point. Me.
That's right. There's a reason.
True.
He reasoned to the resurrection.
Well, we have to remind ourselves, and we're talking about this being the end of a year. I mean, there's a reason that we get excited about making New Year's resolutions, because we look back and say, man, my New Year's resolution should be to try to keep it longer than a week.
Yep.
Is that, you know, you just get in the habit of getting fired up and saying, you know, this year's going to be different. You last a week and...
Then you go from
maybe
there.
Not, you know, because you, like I say, don't, you can't underestimate, you get in a routine and a habit, or you're putting out the vibe, whether it's, you know, in marriage or as a teenager or whatever, and that just kind of becomes who you are in your daily life. It's hard to upset that apple cart and then say, what is God's plan for me? Am I in tune with his plan? Because you don't want to wake up and be that guy.
Right.
I mean, Judas gets a bad rap, but up until this point, all he was maybe a little bit pretentious about the money, and maybe some of them didn't like him, but, you know, they had trouble getting along anyway. I mean, we're all humans.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, you're going to betray the Son of God with a kiss of all things?
Yeah, that's what got me.
I mean, that's about as low as you can go.
Yeah, it reminded me of the old mafia. Let's take another break. So Matthew 26 is, you see this sort of preparation mindset for Jesus. He knows exactly what's coming. And then you get this Judas thing comes in the middle of it. And to your point earlier, Jace, when he gets to the Lord's Supper, it's interesting because there was a lot of significance. One, of course, is he's once again fulfilling scripture, because this is the Passover meal, which means that there was a lamb provided. Mm-hmm. You know, for the angel of death to pass over, going way all the way back to when they left Egypt back in Exodus. But now he's saying, I am the Passover lamb. So this will be the last true Passover supper is this one.
Yeah.
Because you don't need a lamb anymore. I am the lamb. We found.
Now, don't you think it's significant that they had the Lord's Supper here? And he said, I won't do this again before, you know, we drink it anew in my Father's kingdom. But he allowed Judas, even though he said, I know you're going to betray me.
And Peter.
He still washed his feet.
And he washed Peter's feet too.
And they still took part of the supper, which is my point, shows you that his grace is for everybody.
That's right.
I mean, he knew this was fixed to happen, but he didn't say, you may go now. I mean, it wasn't unkind.
Right.
He didn't give him, you know, a warning and say, you know, look, in a couple of days, your guts are going to be poured out in a field.
Well, and again, from John's account of this same night, you know, that's when he goes into the foot wash and all that. John says this is the moment where Satan fully entered Judas, was in this supper moment. And I've always thought it was because of the guilt. I mean, think about it. He knows what he's done. And here's Jesus down on his knees washing his feet. I mean, of course, you got two ways to go there. You either fall on your face and said, Lord, let me tell you what I've done. It's the worst thing ever. Or
you're not going to believe what I'm planning to
that's
do.
That's right. Or
but
you
they
just,
didn't like the plan.
That's right.
None of them liked it.
But it wasn't even enough, Jace. The grace wasn't enough to make him change the plan.
I think it was enough for the rest of them.
I do, too.
Because they realized, oh, God's plan was that he loved us so much that he actually died for us and will forgive us as scoundrel as we are. But Judas was like, no.
And you remember Peter didn't want him to wash his. He said, no. And he said, no, unless I wash your feet, you have no part of me. And he says, okay, then wash my whole body. He said, no, you don't need a bath. I'm just here to show you that you serve people, you know. But, I mean, Peter was also arguing with the plan because he was like, no, Jesus, you're too good to be down on your knees in front of me. I just think it shows the picture. Jesus is right. I think it shows the picture to them. And that's why I think about every Lord's Supper that took place after he left.
As many miracles as they saw, one after the other, mm-hmm. you would have thought they wouldn't get down there where – comes to push, so comes to shove, and say, "That's I don't think he's going to do what he's telling us he's going to do.
Right.
He's been telling me he's going to go up there to Jerusalem. I yep. must be killed, be right. raised from the dead." And they were like, "Whoa, whoa." Peter arguing with him. I mean, they just didn't. They said, "That's too much grace.
Right?
It sounds too good."
And you want to know one of the most underrated verses in the Bible is that verse 30. It says, "When they had sung a hymn."
Yeah.
They went out to the Mount of Olives. Well, you just think about it. They're all standing around in a circle singing. I mean, you're singing with the Son of God who is literally fixed to go die for the sins of the world, past, present, and future, and be resurrected to show humans that we're not trapped here. I mean, we're actually a way off the planet. And literally, minutes after this, they went from singing a song in a circle to not trusting the plan of God in betrayal, denial.
Yeah, all the predictions.
Fear, whatever, greed. You can throw in malice, every kind of bad word you can think of. His disciples, not just the world, his disciples demonstrated in that moment. Makes me think, though, just because you're sitting in a building singing a song, that can change about 5 minutes after you walk out, depending on the circumstances.
5 seconds.
Yeah.
Plus, Jace, that last segment there from 36 down to 46, when, to me, is the most gripping human picture of Jesus on earth. He's anguished. He knows what he's about to go through. Mm-hmm. He asked the disciples, just pray for me while I go over here and I got to have a conversation with the Father. And he comes back, and every time they've fallen asleep, which tells me that they weren't near anguished like he was. You know, it has been like if you were with somebody and you were waiting for them to pass away, and sometimes people are up all night waiting for that to happen. People are around the bed. Nobody goes over and just goes to sleep. I mean, every moment I've been in like that, everybody's like awake and waiting for something to happen.
When in a crisis situation.
That's what I'm saying. You're not asleep.
You know?
But to Jesus, this was the moment. He knew what was about to happen. And he was like, he kept saying to the Almighty, look, if I've missed something here, if there's another way, but I trust you.
You got to remember, Acts chapter 1, he stayed after his resurrection 40 days on the earth, and it says to convince them he was alive,
right?
Because they were still saying, until I Thomas and them, they all said, I won't believe it until I'm I mean, he was right there like, I don't know about this,
right?
I mean, when I see the marks in his arms and legs, okay, you may get me there. Well, he's went up there to Jesus and said, my Lord and my God, Jesus, check this out, Thomas. Right, right. You're the one that said that, you know, I couldn't pull this off. He showed him the marks, you know.
Right.
Thomas bows down before him and said, my Lord and my God, good night. He did do it. You right. did do it.
Right. We remember he was going against the official account, too.
That's when the anguish started to unwind and turn to faith.
Right.
And then in his grace. That's when it began to, they said he did it.
Yeah. Well, that changed everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. But still so many people didn't believe it. Because remember, there was a fake news story going around that with the soldiers. No, it never happened.
Yeah.
And by the way, it's still there today. No, he didn't really die. He swooned.
He gave many convincing proofs that he was alive.
Right.
But he spent 40 days to make sure they got it.
But what I love about this scene in the garden is it shows me that Jesus knew what he was going to face. He also knew he was going to be raised from the dead. He's been saying it the whole time.
Yep.
But even if you know you're going to be resurrected, when you face death, especially the death he was going to face, it's hard.
Oh.
I mean, you know, when you know some bad stuff's going to happen to you, when you get that word, you know, you got this, and you're like, man.
And they beat on him and just bruised him and beat on him and
spit in his face, mocked him.
Jamming thorns down on him. Right. You know, every way you could.
He knew it was going to be terrible.
Oh, yeah.
But what I love about that is it shows me that even God in flesh, who knows he's going to be resurrected, has to get ready for the moment.
Yep.
Even when you know. Even when you don't even have the fear of death,
yep.
It's a moment. You know, it's a moment for human beings to face.
It's just what's in his heart. I mean, you got pretty much the betrayer taking his own life in the same time frame as the creator of the universe allowing his life to be taken.
Right.
And you're like, oh, they almost did the same thing. No. Couldn't have been any different.
That's right.
I mean, just think how.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at the final result, you're like, yeah, they're both dead. So who cares? Uh-oh, one of them came back.
That's right.
I mean, it just. But I think that's kind of how shallow we view things. Is it just doesn't seem that significant, not trusting God's plan or not really focusing on God's grace as the motivator. But you know what? It's the difference in how your life responds to that and how it looks after when you do think to yourself, you know what? This is horrible. This is terrible. I messed up. She messed up. Whatever. But God's got a plan way bigger than this. I mean, right. And once you start down that road, you're coming out of it. Yep. I mean, because God's bringing you out of it. And then you're like, oh, and he still loves me. No matter what, even if I am in a potter's field. And
yeah.
I mean, the one who quit was Judas.
Yeah.
He quit. And I think that's the biggest difference. And Jesus was in torment.
Everybody can be rescued if they would just acknowledge he's who he said he was.
Right.
He did what he said he was going to do.
Yeah.
I believe. Without that, you'll become a Judas where your guts are spilled off.
Well, that's why the atheistic mind misses it a lot of times, because they're like, well, show me the proof, show me the proof. And, you know, you can make pretty clever arguments based on the evidence and the historical accounts. And, you know, why did all these disciples give their life in the name of Jesus if they knew it was a lie? I mean, you can come up with all these things. But what they're really missing is it's an experience that once you experience it, once you just through faith embrace it and you start studying and reading the very words of God, you start experiencing who he was. I mean, that's how you do it. It's not about thinking, oh, if I saw him, you know, then I would change my life. You know, it's like once you experience it and you feel what was in his heart.
The truth. It's a hard sale. It's a hard sale.
It is. Which we're going to get into that when we get into the rest of his passion. All right. So we'll pick it up here in chapter 26.
Next year.
We'll pick it up next year.
Is this a see y'all next year?
See y'all next year.
See y'all next year. We got ducks to kill here. And people do convert.
Thanks for listening to the Unashamed Podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube, and be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.